family now lives in Florida. And for them, Christmas marks the anniversary of a most unusual family reunion, an event which happened over 25 years ago.
During Christmas, we don't go to church, but we do mark Christmas. We do mark, you know, the celebration of the new year. It's the holidays.
But is there a time each year when you all gather as a family just to mark the fact that you made it through all that, that you're still together?
It's interesting you ask that question. Honestly, no, we don't. Because not so much that it's so long ago. It's because every day we talk about it. I mean, in a 24-hour period, somehow during our conversation, something always come up that relate to that part of our life.
How old are your sons, Hui?
My sons are 8, 7, 6, and 4.
And do they know these stories?
Very little. I save it until they get a little older to tell them. Every night I tell them one story, and a lot of them had something to do with my childhood in Vietnam. But those stories is tough for them to understand, but they will know about it. That I will tell them every single part of it.
It would be tough for children to understand what the Nguyen family went through. Years of separation and deprivation so severe that Hui, at the age of 14, his mother and two sisters left their father behind and took to a boat in the South China Sea. Early in the journey, the boat was caught in a storm, the waves perhaps 100 feet high. And then they noticed what looked like another boat coming towards them.
So that gave everybody a lot of hope, and we screamed even harder than that, than before.
This was what, a big boat, a freighter, a barge? What was it?
I think somebody mentioned that it was an oil barge. They came by, and it was at least about 100 yards away. I remember people pulling little kids above the boat so that they could see that there were women and children on board. Now that I'm older and come to think of it, maybe it was impossible to help because it was in the middle of a storm. So after a couple minutes, that boat left. So we were beyond help and we kind of gave up.
I was going to say that must have been so demoralizing to be so close.
Totally demoralizing because you screamed so hard, you lost so much energy, you lost so much hope, and the torch burned out. But the next morning, I do remember, we were traveling back.
Back towards Vietnam, or do you know where you're
back to Vietnam, yeah. Right. Because I think somebody mentioned that we don't have enough oil or water. So we were all happy. And I remember my mom and us, we were so happy. I mean, I was dying to go home to stay with my grandma, you know. And a bunch of people took out the food that they actually carried on and started to eat them. We were happy for about an hour until the crew that who were driving the boat. They said, no, we're not going home. We would rather die because if we come back, we go to prison.
Soon enough, the food and water on board was in short supply. The engine died. Some of the military men on the boat made a makeshift sail. But Hui Nguyen says they really had no idea where they were or where they were headed.
One evening, I think this is into the third or fourth night, we started to see tons of fishing boats surrounding us. And everybody on board was cheering and clapping. I was happy too. I didn't know until the couple crew members in the back said, no, don't be happy yet because these are Thai fishermen. And Thai fishermen at the time, they could turn into pirates and they could do bad things.
But what did they want you to do? Just sit quietly in the boat?
Just sit quiet, pretend like, you know, we are strong, we're cool. By morning time, about 8 o'clock or 6 o'clock in the morning, the first boat came. And they threw us some fish and some water, and we were happy. So we invited them, or they invited themselves on our boat. And they walked back and forth on the boat, and some people were happy that they treat us nice. So some people started to give them watches and a couple of small rings and things like that. And they were happy with that. So they didn't beat anybody up. Except they, I don't know if they asked for permission, but they took the engine, the outboard engine, from us. And that was cool because it was broken.
Right.
And then they left. And then the second boat came. And these guys didn't come in peace. They jumped down, they screamed, they was pretty barbaric looking. So they ransacked the boat. They beat up a couple people. They took everything. they were checking every single corner of the boat. I mean, every single nook and cranny you can think of.
Money, jewelry, is that what they were looking for?
Yeah, primarily? That's what they were looking for. And then they left.
Hui Nguyen was worried that his mother and sisters might be singled out by the pirates. So he found some dark grease in the boat and made them smear it on their faces to hide their beauty. It would turn out to be a wise move. You're listening to the story. I'm Dick Gordon. Soon after...
Yeah, they were even scarier than the other boat.
But there's nothing left on the boat at this point, though.
There's nothing left on the boat. You can tell because you just look down and see a pile of people, you know, scared as hell. And their faces were totally in shock at this time. And these guys were healthy and strong. They came down, they started beating a bunch of men. Actually, they slapped my sister real hard because she didn't let him, one of the guy, check her out for jewelry. So she started crying and they just slapped her.
And they're doing what, looking in the clothing of the men and the women?
Yeah, men and women. I was sitting in the cabin in front of my mom and my other sister. And you just watch them. You just can't do anything. And then, out of nowhere, they pulled their boat right next to ours. And immediately, very professionally, very powerfully, they took the women in the front and they just yanked them off the boat and threw into their boat. And they did that to, they took 7 women. And people were screaming and crying. At this time, it was chaos because they went back and they chopped the sail off and they threw that in the water. And they start ramming our boat. I'm sure if they did that a couple more times, they would probably break the boat in half. And then they took off.
And your family, though, I mean, your sisters, your mother, they were with you?
Yes. They were my mom, my sisters. We were all sitting close by watching this whole thing. And I thought they were going to come to them because they were close. I mean, I don't know why they stopped at 7. But they stopped, so they left. And we were kind of sitting there really numb. Everybody was you know, we thought we were going to die, and we just like, you know, whatever, whoever come by again, that was it, because we were just sitting there and waiting.
And you're still out of sight of land. You have, at this point, no food, no water, right?
No food, no water, no sail. And no land. We start seeing a little less activities around us because the fishing boats were further and further away. And I don't know if our boat moved itself or what, but they were just further and further away. And I remember one young man, he was in his 20s, he jumped in the water and he pulled a sail that was still attaching to the boat by some ropes. And he pulled that back and it was cut in half. But we were able to kind of put it back up again and move in the direction of the wind and the current of the water. And we kept on going. And at this time, it was it was quiet. It was like death in the family, you know.
Hui Nguyen's family had been desperate to leave Vietnam after the war. But they left without the father. He'd been an officer in the South Vietnamese Army and spent years in prison. He'd been released, but when the family was ready to take its chances as boat people, he decided to stay behind. He knew that if he was caught, he'd go back to prison. He couldn't stand that prospect. You're listening to The Story. I'm Dick Gordon. Hui Nguyen, his mother, and his sisters eventually landed in Malaysia, and they were transferred to a refugee camp in the Philippines. Life seemed good there compared to what they'd been through.
We had food in the morning. They would come, somebody would come and pick up a ration of food, and we divided up into each family's ration, and that was it. And then you go to school, you go to English school, you do a little bit of community service. I was able to, you know, get a job like cleaning the gym, you know, sweeping and cleaning and things like that. But it was good.
Did you know at that time that you were going to the United States?
Yes. We had to go through a series of interviews and processing where the U.S. and